Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
John Ensley joins me here today, and you can find what he is up to by going to jumponwithjohn.com. That's a great domain name, John. jumponwithjohn.com. And he is a chartered financial consultant.
Correct.
And as well as we might touch a bit on infinite banking concept again, or banking, bank on yourself professionals. But John, really appreciate your time today as we dive a little bit into some of this.
Thanks, Jack. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to start things off. You know, I have joked a bit regarding financial consulting a bit, because more times than not, it seems like this is an accidental occupation. Can you tell us how you got into it?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. It wasn't so accidental in my case, fortunately, but I agree with you. Real estate agents, financial advisors, there's a couple of professions out there that people tend to stumble into. And so in my case, I went this direction really after what I call a wake-up call with some projects that didn't go so well. So I really go back to the late 90s. I was with a company that was going to do an IPO, the build up to the tech bubble, and it was all going to be amazing. And we were all going to be wealthy beyond our wildest dreams. And then with the bubble burst, the IPO got taken off the table. It didn't ever happen. And it was still a great company. I had a great experience there. And I left there with some money in an employee stock ownership plan. And so I decided I'm going to invest in real estate this time. And so bought some property in Washington, was doing a subdivision, and the plan was to build spec homes on each of these lots. And of course, by now we're in about the middle 2000s, and my appraisals were just unbelievable, going up every year and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm about halfway through building the first spec home in 2008. And when everything just crashed. So I always throw the caveat out that I made some mistakes. I didn't really know what I was doing. That certainly contributed to the situation. But then the economics really were the needle that broke the camel's back, or the straw. So after that failure, it's what I refer to as kind of a wake-up call. It was what is going on? I got to figure some things out. And I just started studying and reading and everything I could get my hands on. And I was on a webinar late one night, and this financial advisor was walking through this example of a couple and their home equity. And he started talking about a cash value life insurance policy. And it was my first exposure to the idea that life insurance could be anything other than a death benefit. And I really had a terrible attitude at the time. I hated the whole idea of life insurance. I didn't want to be worth more dead than alive. But it really got me to thinking. And so that led me to more books and more information. And I wound up meeting with an advisor in the Portland, Oregon area, and setting up an infinite banking policy, or a bank on yourself policy of my own, and started using that, and got very passionate about the whole thing, and realized that of all the financial advisors I'd been to over the years, nobody had ever mentioned anything like this before. So seemed like some information that wasn't widely available. And I was kind of ready for a career change. So that's when I got licensed for insurance and completed the agent trainings through both Bank on Yourself and the Infinite Banking Concept, and launched my practice in 2012. So like I said, not exactly an accidental entry into financial services. It was pretty on purpose in my case, but I did sort of stumble that direction after that failed project there in Washington.
Sure. It sounds like it was a pretty hard lesson learned. I mean, could you talk a little bit about the mindset there and what you had to do to try to come out of that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I talk a lot when I talk about this, about the financial lessons learned, but this was also some serious life lessons learned. There was as everything kind of fell apart there in 08, 09, there was a divorce and some kids with problems, and just a whole lot of things were were simultaneously happening. And so that awakening really encompassed more than just financial. And so it was, you go through kind of this range of emotions. Not only do you feel like you failed at your endeavor, whatever it was, but then you start to question all kinds of things about yourself. And as it turned out, as dark as that was a great process to go through, to go through that self-evaluation and looking inside and peeling the layers away and figuring out who I am and what do I actually want. And, you know, I kind of refer to previous to those years as like my zombie years, where I was just kind of doing what I thought I was supposed to do, doing the things that everybody thinks is what path you're supposed to be on. And after the awakening, it became much more directed in creating a lifestyle and an experience that I want to have.
Outside of this webinar that kind of caught your ear and your interest, was there anything else that kind of spurred the turnaround that was kind of the linchpin that you kind of found your footing again?
Well, yeah, interestingly enough, I also kind of rediscovered a childhood passion with sailing and sailboats and cruising about that same time. And so as I came out of that and started rebuilding my life, it sort of included that aspect of it. And not so much from a mechanical standpoint of sailing sailboats, but from a freedom, you know, pursuing a lifestyle where you had the time and the ability to travel by boat all over the place, right? That whole concept. And so that drove a lot of what I wanted to do. I purposely went into the type of practice that I now have and run because it can be done virtually. I have run my practice from Mexico. I've, you know, run it from boats all over the Pacific Northwest. I've run it from the road. So I've been able to pursue that lifestyle I was trying to create through the work that I chose to do. But at the same time, I also chose to do work that I feel, you know, prior to this, my profession was, I was in sales, was in industrial sales, and I was really good at it. I got paid great to do it. It was great companies, but I could have cared less about the products I was selling or, you know, any of it. It was just something to do. So the fact that now I work with people every day and show them tools that they may not understand or be aware of that they can use to invest in real estate, to invest in whatever they want to build wealth, to create, to have more control in their life over their finances. And so I feel like I get to go to work every day now and do work that matters. I actually care about what I do, and I'm good at it. So, it's the best of both worlds.
It's miraculous how that can supercharge that effort, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
When you care about it.
Yes. Having purpose and something you're passionate about changes your mindset completely.
You know, you mentioned a minute ago that you initially hated the concept of life insurance, and that I would have to imagine that there are a lot of people who are listening to this show or out there who are in that same mindset, in that same boat. Frankly, you have a lot of extremely popular radio hosts who tell you to avoid whole life insurance.
For sure.
What would you tell those people to kind of open their minds and turn it around?
So there's a couple of things. One of the things I tend to talk a lot about, and I use a story to get to a point. You're probably familiar with a guy named Thomas Edison.
Oh yeah.
Right? Invented the light bulb, kind of an American
hero. Yeah, he stole
hero.
Everything from Tesla. Yeah, I get it.
Exactly. So the story I always go through, right, is in 1903, Thomas Edison was filming himself electrocuting animals, the most famous of which was an adult elephant. So, why on earth would Thomas Edison be filming these macabre scenes? And it's Tesla, right? He and Tesla were in a head-to-head battle and over whose electricity system was going to go into the Niagara power plant. And so it was a marketing message. That's all it was. Edison wanted to convince as many people as he could that AC electricity, alternating current electricity, which was Tesla's invention, was too dangerous to use. And so he was electrocuting animals and creating these, you know, these, is it too dangerous to use? Well, you know, Tesla won the battle. The AC system went into the power station and the whole world pretty much operates on it today. So probably not too dangerous to use, but it was a marketing message. And so I always use that story because in financial services, there are so many marketing messages, right? I mean, we're just bombarded with them. You know, we have one guy out there who's, I hate annuities, right? Anything about annuities. And it, another one is, you know, bashing whole life insurance or bashing this, or this is good or this is bad. And so I always encourage people to tune out the marketers, including me. Right? Tune out my marketing messages. Pamela Yellen, the Bank on Yourself book author, right? Tune out all the marketing messages and look at something for what it is and what it does as it applies to you. So what I'm really saying is use your critical thinking skills, which are unfortunately a rarer and rarer commodity nowadays. Use your critical thinking skills and analyze something for what it is. If you've got a tool here that you can put money into, and that it will build up value or cash that you can use at favorable terms to you to do things with, do you care what it's called? Do you care that it's called life insurance? Does that matter as long as it functions and it does things that are a benefit to you? And so I think we just get too caught up in the marketing messages and what something's called versus, hey, does this work for me? The way they're explaining it. And if it does, why wouldn't you use it?
Right. So you mentioned that you have a specialty, not only in infinite banking, but the banking on yourself concept. You're kind of in a unique situation there. Could you kind of break it down if there are any differences between the two?
So there's some differences in how some advisors approach it. But I have lots of colleagues who are Bank on Yourself professionals who are also infinite banking concept practitioners and vice versa. So it crosses the thing. And you know, interesting history, right? So a guy named R. Nelson Nash wrote a book called Becoming Your Own Banker back in the late 80s. And Nelson sadly passed away here a few years ago. But Nelson Nash and Pamela Yellen, Pamela was introduced to the concept through Nelson Nash. They were friends. Nelson would come out and speak at the Bank on Yourself professional conferences every year until he passed. So there is a very close crossover between those two organizations. I mean, they're both essentially the marketing, right? Whole life insurance been around almost 200 years. So there's nothing new there, but the marketers come up with names and different things to call it because it's a lot easier to talk about the bank on yourself concept than it is to try to go into whole life insurance structured the right way so that you can, you know what I mean? So you got a name for it. It just makes it easier to talk about. So there are some differences now in how an advisor in each of those camps might approach policy design or specific functions or use cases, but essentially it's the same concept of using properly designed whole life insurance contracts as a platform for wealth building and investing.
Just to remind everybody, head over to jumponwithjohn.com to learn a little bit more about what John can help you with. Again, I believe this is a complimentary first visit, right, John?
Yeah, I do a free strategy session. I firmly believe that, you know, this concept can work for just about anyone, but it's not for everyone. And the way to figure that out is to have a conversation with someone like myself who knows what they're doing, understands the concept top to bottom, and can help you come to a decision about whether it's a good fit for you or not. You know, you want to look out for somebody trying to shove the concept down your throat or sell it as the solution to every problem in the world, because it's not. You just want to have somebody that's an educator that can help you understand the concept and arrive at a good educated decision.
Sure. And then if you found some value in what we're talking about so far, could you do us a quick favor and share it with one of your investor friends? And so, John, you just mentioned that this is not for everyone. Can you dive into that a little bit? Who is this not for?
Absolutely. That's a great question. So who's it not for? Well, it's, I think there's actually quite a few categories where it's not for, right? In order to build equity up in these policies, you have to have some cash flow. You have to have some cash flow or some existing assets or cash that you can use to fund these policies. So if you are at a point in your life where you're barely rubbing two pennies together, you're probably not quite in the right position to get started. The other thing is that if you go online, so much of the information out there pitches this idea as the solution to everything. And it's not always the solution to everything. So give you an example. Somebody referred a gal to me not long ago, young gal, and she needed a car and she had inherited $15,000. And somebody said, oh, you got to do infinite banking and, you know, set up a policy and then borrow the money from the policy and go buy your car. And so in talking to her for a few minutes, it became obvious that if she took her $15,000 and set up a policy and then borrowed the money to go buy the car she desperately needed, she did not have the cash flow to either pay that loan back or continue to fund the policy. Mm-hmm. So it actually was a terrible solution in that situation. And I told her so, right? Take your money and go buy the car you need. Now, you should be saving, right? So we can get something small going that'll get you started so you can start building it up that you can afford, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But that was not a solution to her problem. And I think so often it's billed as the only way to do something, and that's not the case. So the other folks that probably don't find this concept appealing are people that don't want to take control or personal control of their finances. So they like handing their money off to you know, XYZ advisors and just letting them do everything. This is a very personal responsibility oriented approach, right? Because you have to be, quote unquote, an honest banker is the way I put it. In terms of paying back loans and funding the policies and managing it, it's very, that's matter of fact, that's one of my key precepts in my practice is being in control. You want to be in control of your money. But some people don't like that, right? They don't like that level of responsibility. So that's probably not a good fit as well.
So you mentioned, you know, that this finding the right consultant or somebody to help you with this can be a little bit fraught with peril, to say the least. What type of questions should somebody be asking their consultant to just make sure that they know what they're talking about and that it's a good fit?
Yeah, I would ask an advisor, you know, exactly how the policy is going to be designed, and make sure that that lines up with the information you've probably read in books or whatever the case may be, right? You probably aren't landing at an advisor's office or on the other end of the line if you haven't at least had some exposure to the concept through a book or a podcast or something. But there's a specific way these policies have to be designed. The other thing is that I would make sure to ask questions that are going to orient to your specific situation, rather than these general terms about, you know, whole life insurance and how wonderful it is. Well, this is what I want to do. How will that work? Right. Just very, very specific about how it will work. The other thing to watch for is that an advisor that's got your best interest in mind is going to be providing as much information as they can. They'll almost overload with information so that, you know, you're seeing the illustrations, you're seeing the numbers, you're seeing exactly how everything plays out. You're getting all your questions answered. Nobody's pushing you to complete an application, right? And until you're ready to complete an application and move forward. And I think in the financial services industry, unfortunately, there is, well, the very training programs in many institutions are, you know, get the application, get them to sign, get them to commit, always be closing, right? These kind of sales tactics. And I think that's unfortunate. I think somebody's got to really understand it and make an educated decision to move forward and not be coerced or pressured into it.
Right. Yeah. Earlier you shared a story with that young lady who's going to maybe use this to buy a car. That's a good launching point as to, are there some other gotchas that we need to be aware of? Like, I can't imagine you being able to put in the $15,000 and having access to that from day one, for example.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So you have access to most of it, but not all of it. So if you were to put 15,000 in on day one, you know, probably 80% of that you'd be able to borrow against immediately or more or less immediately. But yeah, not all of it.
Is there anything else that we should be aware of? Like so that the users would, people would have a rough idea of what else they, restrictions that might be available?
So, you know, there's not a lot of restrictions other than what you put on it, right? Every individual is going to be a little different. I have clients who put a couple hundred dollars a month and that's how they fund their policies or just getting started. And I have clients that put six figures per year into their policies. So it ranges everything in between. So I think the main thing, again, with this personal responsibility is that, okay, we're going to set a certain amount of money aside. We're going to put it in this policy. This cash value is going to grow. And then I can borrow against it. And that's where you don't want to just borrow against it for any old thing. You want to have a plan. And, you know, I really stress that policy loans are ideal for investment situations. They're ideal when you're going to create a return or create a cash flow from something mm-hmm. you're going to use that policy loan for. Then it's an amazing method of financing. It's okay for cars and boats and, you know, major purchases. If you're comparing that to some other way you're going to finance it, or, you know, you have to compare what to what. So, you know, those are the things. Just approach it as carefully as you would if you were borrowing money from anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine it's easier to handle if you're investing in something that's producing income that can then pay the loan back.
That's an ideal situation for sure.
Right. Could you give us an example of somebody you helped through this process that eventually got into a new property?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a couple of examples. I've got a client I'm working with now who is doing new construction. And, you know, this person funded their policy with some significant lump sums in the first 2 years they had the policy open, and they're now drawing against those policies in the form of policy loans. I think he's on his third home now that he's been using the policy loans to finance the new construction. And that's, you know, that's going quite well. You know, I can use myself as an example. When my wife and I built the home that we're currently building, her background is home building. So that tends to be the direction we go a lot is construction. But when we built it, we designed the ability to put an ADU, a two-bedroom apartment, on the property. We pulled about $70,000 out of our policies to put that extra building in, right? It was pretty low cost to do it because it was already above a garage that was in the original plan. But if you just look at that example, we pulled about $70,000 in policy loans to build that two-bedroom apartment. We now rent that two-bedroom apartment as a medium-term rental for anywhere from $2,200 to $2,400 a month. So, you know, we're generating close to $30,000 a year from that two-bedroom apartment based on a $70,000 policy loan. That's pretty good, a pretty good cash flow mm-hmm. on that investment, right? So within, you know, just a couple of years, really, we're going to pay that loan back just from the cash flow from the property. So yeah,
pretty good.
Yeah, it's a great way to use the policy.
Right. No, this is a really interesting concept and conversation, John, and I'm going to make you change subjects just a little bit, just because of the financial advisor aspect of your position. I'd like your opinion as to how you currently see the current economy and how things are looking in the future. And I know you're not going to predict things, but
yeah, exactly. And it's pretty unpredictable right now. We're so many factors coming into play. We've got, you know, after the 2008 meltdown and the bailouts and all the things that went on there and all the quote unquote money printing, you couldn't even fathom how much further they could go, right? And then with mm-hmm. COVID and all of that situation, I mean the you know, there's a great book called Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt, and he talks in there about the idea of really what it comes down to is unintended consequences. And the when we meddle with the economy, we create distortions in the economy. And we don't really know where those distortions are going to show up. And that's the best way I can describe what I've seen unfold over the last 4 or 5 years, is that the monetary policy and the economic policies over the last 10 to 15 years have created these weird distortions where, you know, like we've got real estate markets that have just gone crazy in the last couple of years. Now, of course, the interest rates have gone up and the sales are down, but prices really aren't. They're starting mm-hmm. to, but it's not, you would think with sales down as much as they are, prices would come down, but we created these weird distortions where people are sitting on 2% and 3% mortgages and they won't sell, even mm-hmm. though we've got demand. And, you know, it's just, we've created these distortions throughout our economy. And I think it's created an environment where no one can predict what happens next. You know, the smartest guys in the room and gals in the room have no idea what's going to happen at the Fed, at the government, at these big banks, right? None of them have any idea what the results are going to be. So each of us as individuals have no chance. So my message really to all my clients when I talk with them about economics and what's going on in the world and, you know, wars and all of these things is that don't try to predict or time or, you know, any of this kind of stuff. Use strategies that will prepare you no matter what happens. And that's one of the reasons that I latched on to the concepts that I work with life insurance products, is that there's a history there that shows they're pretty resilient. World wars, right? All of these kind of things. There's a history of resilience. Is it 100% safe? It's not. Nothing's 100% safe, but it's probably a really good shot that if I'm holding my assets in this place, it's got a pretty good chance of surviving, right? If the worst happens that is out there that people talk about, then it's really not going to matter too much, mm-hmm. right? So we're not going to plan based on the worst case scenario. We're going to plan based on what the most likely scenarios are, and we're going to use tools that prepare us no matter what happens, rather than trying to prepare for one particular event that may or may not happen, right? There's a lot of people right now that are just terrified of central bank digital currencies, CBDCs. You know, there was a bunch of marketing out over the summer that some date in July was like the drop dead date. It's all, you know, the world is coming to an end on July 15th or whatever it was. And of course, July came and went. There really was nothing to it. Digital currencies.
I've heard those dates come and go hundreds of times over.
So many times. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So. And, you know, digital currencies they're coming no matter what we do. It's, you know, I had a client reach out recently about this, all just terrified that, you know, these digital currencies were coming. And, you know, in 1971, President Nixon took us off the gold standard completely, right? Closed the gold window, and nobody got to vote on it, right? It wasn't mm-hmm. like they sent a survey out and you got a choice. It just happened. And I think that's mm-hmm. the way I look at digital currencies. It's going to happen, and we're not going to get a vote on it. You know, the US dollar is still going to be the US dollar. It's just going to be in digital form, which it's already about 99% digital. So is that going to create more disruptions or distortions? Probably. But there's nothing to freak out about. There's nothing to melt down about, or, you know, don't go dig a hole in your backyard and just fill it full of gold coins because you're terrified of central bank digital currencies. You know, another example of distortions, but we just really have to be prepared for whatever happens within some reasonable framework.
Right. Just to remind everybody one more time, head over to jumponwithjohn.com and take advantage of John's offer of a quick call with him to see if it'd be a good fit. But before I let you go, John, I have some rapid fire questions for you as we close out this episode.
All right, let's do it.
What is a lie real estate investors or business owners tell themselves and others?
I just read an article about the dangers of being overly optimistic. So I think that's what I would say, is that, you know, that sometimes we tend to say, it's all going to work out somehow. We're just optimists when maybe we mm-hmm. need a little realism.
Do you have a book recommendation, or what are you reading right now?
So a book I really like to recommend that most people have not heard of is a book called The Great Depression, A Diary by Benjamin Roth. And it's a really interesting book. A Youngstown, Ohio attorney, a young attorney, kept detailed diaries all through the Great Depression up until the early 1950s. His son found them later on and then had them published. And it's just a fantastic kind of chronicle of the Great Depression from a financial standpoint, and some of the things that worked and didn't work. And cash value life insurance comes up in the book. It's an interesting read.
What is one tool you can't live without?
My laptop would be probably the one thing in terms of, you know, I think I mentioned I've run my practice from kind of all over the place, all over the world, and this technology is just amazing. So being able to take my computer and travel anywhere and still do my work is just unbelievable.
If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Stay in control. Don't relinquish control of as little as possible to anybody else. Stay in control.
What single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented that has a direct time-saving impact on your business, and how?
So I'm big on automations. I use a CRM system, and a lot of my responses, my calendar, just I automate as many things as I can. You know, emails that tend to go to every client, that's all been automated. It's things like that, so that I'm saving a lot of time by automating the repetitive tasks.
And I'm going to take this as an opportunity to plug Real Deal CRM. That's one of my things. And it's all about automation for real estate investors.
Awesome. Love it.
Is there a question or concept you wished we would have covered here today?
You know, the only concept that we haven't talked about that I think is always important to point out with infinite banking or bank on yourself is that I never compare a properly designed life insurance policy, whole life policy, to another investment. The life insurance policy is a receptacle. It's a place we hold cash that we then go use to make investments. So it's we use whole life and we invest. It's not an either or. We don't compare it to real estate or compare it to stocks and bonds or compare it to something else. It's this thing we use to hold and manage cash that allows us to then go make investments in whatever our thing is, whether it's real estate or crypto or, you know, whatever your thing is.
Well, I appreciate you closing out with that. Head over to jumponwithjohn.com. But I hope you'll consider coming back again sometime. We'll dive into some other topics that you had brought up here.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks for having me, Jack.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.